This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it is the 30th of, in fact, no, it is the 30th of March 2021, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm Kuzu Chuang with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. Now, gentlemen and lady, some say we'll never work the same way again. Some say that the pandemic has force-fed the workforce the idea of a flexible working environment, and now there's no looking back. So the question to both of you is, what will work like look like in the future? Well, join us for a special enterprise webinar where we discuss how to transition seamlessly into the hybrid workplace, how to realign culture, expectations and benefits, and how you can make career choices to ensure you or your company are not left behind. So, of course, that happens on Wednesday, the 31st of March at 1:30 p.m. live on Facebook at BFM Radio. Now, of course, I'm sure both of you will be joining me on that amazing, most excellent webinar where we'll learn about the future. But in the meantime,
of work.
But in the meantime, we are one day away from the end of the quarter.
I know. Where did the quarter go?
I don't know. In the past, I guess. Into the past. Into the distant past.
It got eaten by COVID again.
Yeah.
Has 2021 been kind on you?
Actually, it's been tough the first
really?
Yeah.
Can we ask why?
No la, macam-macam, a hodgepodge of, you know, work and family and, you know, all the kind of stuff.
I don't know. It's like the first few days of 2021 started rather optimistically, I have to say. Then come end of the first quarter, and I was just talking to a friend about it, and there's this sense of like Groundhog Day, right? We keep repeating ourselves. Like
it is, isn't it? I just get
you
that
feel
almost,
like a hamster in a wheel. Continuously.
The vaccines are here. We, you know, COVID-19, a bit of optimism, but yet we seem to be stuck. And I think there's no choice. We just have to kind of grin and bear it until it's over, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, that's the question, right? In fact, I was with a couple of tin hat people.
Your friends.
Yeah. So one of them lives in the jungle. The other one lives in a flat.
What jungle is this?
Seremban, Pandan
Hills. Seremban, yeah. Okay, got it.
I'm not sure that counts as a jungle, but never mind.
I doubt it.
They've got these like wacky theories about COVID, right? And how it's all engineered and it's all about...
I'm not going to entertain those theories, which are false, by the way. Completely false. Anyway, what is the point, Chuang?
Well, no, that's just the thing.
I think the point is idle minds.
Yeah, think of the weirdest things.
Hey, friend, this is the domain of people who have got too much time on their hands and no basic day-to-day considerations like taking the children to school or paying for bills.
Or maybe people who just need to read conventional media reports.
And you're just doom-scrolling.
Yeah, and you're doom-scrolling in the wrong places.
They are rabbit-holing on all kinds of things.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
No words.
Yeah. So anyway...
But in the meantime, what interesting stories do we have, Philip?
Well, we have an article about virtual social media influencers. So step aside the Kardashian sisters. That's all I can say.
Their shows come to an end, right?
Exactly.
And of course, I'll be talking about all the interesting international headlines and including the release of the Ever Given. Ever Given is free.
Everlasting freedom.
Yes, yeah. Ever Given is free.
Forevermore.
She's been released into the wild blue yonder. Okay, well, all that to look forward to after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Velvet Underground with Beginning to See the Light and a whole bunch of electric guitar interference there.
And a cough added by Kuzu Chuang.
That was my contribution.
Just for effect.
So, while they are starting to see the light, some people are not yet. But what is actually starting to see the light? There's some kind of post-pandemic framework for the working environment, right? So, according to The Economist, the outlines of this working regime are beginning to take shape.
Yeah.
It's some kind of flexibility, right?
Yeah, I think they're saying flexibility is the new privilege, where in the past it was about where do you work, but the more important question is when do you work? And yesterday, Shawnee and I, we had a very interesting conversation about this whole 8-8-8 myth, about 8 hours working, 8 hours resting, 8 hours sleeping, which we know doesn't exist for most people. But perhaps that can work, or even, I don't mind even doing 12 hours work, 4 hours rest, if I have flexibility in the work and all that. So I think that's the greatest privilege that's being discussed now.
Yeah, the Australians are 4 hours work, 15 hours barbecue, 3 hours of beer, and then back to work for 4 hours.
That's terrible stereotyping.
Exactly, Chuang.
No, look, if we can't make fun of the Australians, who can you make fun of?
Oh, please. Well, we can start by making fun of ourselves, actually. That's the rule number one. But I think you're right. When you're talking about flexibility, it is a privilege, because let's acknowledge that a lot of people have no flexibility over over where they work and the hours that they have to work, because priorities are priorities, right? It's putting food on the table. And a lot of companies, maybe times are changing, are rather inflexible in those regards.
So you know how Top Glove is done in by the customs border, US border, right?
Yep.
Forced labor, right?
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of Asian leaders who don't believe in these kind of things. They want to see you in the office for 15 hours straight. They don't really look at productivity. They don't really look at results. They look at just face time. First car in the car park, last car to leave. If they don't see you, they ask where you are. So it's one thing to talk about this. It's another thing to put into practice.
Okay, I'm going to wear the baddie hat, right? I'm going to be the boss, all right? So, and then, you know, I'm going to be unpopular here for the moment. But I also see sometimes when this happens, how do we then measure productivity effectively so that we can be, I suppose, more gracious, generous bosses? Because the reality is I pay you a wage, right? I expect X amount of work. But for some work, it is very hard to quantify. So then how do we really allow this kind of flexible hybrid working arrangement to be successful in the future?
Yeah.
Is if we know how to measure results performance, and I think I struggle with that.
Well, one way is quantifiability, lah.
Yes.
But for me, in my business, I use a lot of freelancers, right?
Mm.
And some of these freelancers, they're not the fastest or the most efficient.
Sure.
But the quality of their work, because they do video stuff, they do writing stuff.
Okay, but they deliver to you on the dates they're supposed to, right?
Not always. Okay. Sometimes that but then the quality is great.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
What is the more important thing? I guess for certain businesses, let's say you're Top Glove, you know, it's not about the quality. It's the number of millions of gloves you produce in a minute.
So those are quite easy to quantify, lah.
Yeah. I do want to, though, talk about the intangible qualified elements of working in the office. And that's one of the things that I think we tend to forget. And when you think about work, it is a kind of a sport. And if you have a team sport, you need people to be physically around. But more importantly, I do worry about the fact that it's quite a spectator sport where a lot of it is just observing how someone does the work.
Mm.
And it's very hard to do that physically, to do it virtually.
Yeah.
So you need to have that physical presence. So the goal is, how do you organize that flexibility is going to be important. Because you don't want, like what you said, Chuang, where you have the boss, you know, breathing down your neck and just being irrational and saying, okay, first car in, last car out. That doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I also have just a general observation. Those that are hardworking, those that produce, they produce regardless of where they are.
Yeah.
They could be at home. They could be working in front of their children, the children screaming, but they'll still somehow produce. Those that don't produce, whether they're in an office, whether they're in a co-working space, they still won't produce. At the end of the day, it's your own intention in life, right? How much you want to make out of the job that you do daily. I think that has a very huge bearing in terms of how productive you are.
Yeah, I think the structure of how people come back to office shouldn't be designed purely about how the work output is.
Yes.
But how we want to think about how we interact, make decisions, build an organization and culture, because the risk you're seeing is that there's a high attrition rate coming through because there's no attachment to the teams and people that you are connecting
with. I think that's the missing part, right? COVID-19 has kind of semi-destroyed the team culture.
Well,
and the conversations that you have actually that may not be work-related but build rapport.
Yeah,
but I think it also has taught us that we do not always need to be physically present to do everything.
Not. Yeah.
And look, I mean, this is one of management's conundrums, right? Whether the worker is inherently talented or not inherently talented, that's the question that you ask yourself.
Or hardworking.
And then you take it a step further, right? What can I do to produce an environment which makes him conducive to perform or to produce on time, every time, consistently?
And sometimes the flexibility helps that, right? Because you're a little bit of flexibility, you're given that breathing space, you appreciate it.
Yes.
Because especially if you're a working parent, you know you still have to deliver, but you appreciate the fact that you can do that school run, that you can prepare breakfast for your kid on this particular day.
Yeah.
And then you go back to it. So I think it's great because COVID-19 has shown us that we can work at home and also in the office if we need to.
Well, I mean, we didn't need COVID-19 to show the grey economy, the freelancers, that you could work from home.
Yeah, but a lot of offices, Trump, before that, never considered it at all, right? It was something that they couldn't even have a conversation about. It was either work in the office or, you know, you can take your things and go home, lah, forever.
Don't talk about Lim Wee Chai like that, lah. Just joking. Just joking, Mr. Lim, Tan Sri.
But I think the decision on whether or not we should put someone in shouldn't be dictated by the performance of the individual, because that's how you assess the person. But it's about how you think they need to make decisions and move forward as an organization. And I think this is going to shape how office space is going to look like. You're going to see 20-25% reduction in office space according 100%. To surveys. And even office sharing concepts like common ground and all that are going to proliferate quite a lot more.
You think so?
I suspect.
Which is why WeWork is back with a vengeance, right?
Yeah, and they're going to spec.
They're going to spec?
Yes. $9 billion valuation.
And why not, I say? Why not? There's a lot of capital on that. 6:15, we'll come back after this with some information on virtual and influencing. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Kooks with the so good looking, obviously describing every single member of the Morning Run team on BFM 89.9. Bar One.
I dare you to say who the Bar One is.
Don't say Mila, obviously.
Wow, so humble.
Face made for radio, darling.
I'm just going to keep very quiet here because I should, you know.
Because she doesn't want to be associated to be the one, right, for sure.
I definitely am not the one.
Obviously, because she's the one who said how good looking she is and how well dressed she is.
I am better dressed than you gentlemen in the morning at 5 a.m. But never mind, that's another discussion for another day.
On to more important matters. Social media is a $15 billion industry growing fast by exponential double digits. And then now the next big thing is the virtual social and media influencer. Things that, well, influencers that don't exist other than in CGI and artificial intelligence. Okay?
So now they have arrived too.
They've arrived. So there's things like Ray from Singapore and, you know, I don't know what you call it, traveled to Shanghai. Then there's obviously things like Nunuri, Shudugram, Little McKellar. These are all CGI creations, but they've got huge influencer followings.
Okay.
A few 100,000 on Instagram and what have you.
By the way, this is from an article in South China Morning Post.
South China Morning Post, yes.
Yeah. I struggled with this. I had to ask the producer what was this all about. That tells you how
We haven't even gotten on the social media.
I'm like, who are these people? Are they real? They look like, you know. I'm like, is this for real? I mean, are they? Do they exist?
But isn't it incredible that you can't differentiate between whether they're real or not?
All I can see
That's the point,
you know,
right?
What I'm already thinking, yeah. How much money do you save? Wow, this is amazing.
Exactly.
Because this virtual social media influencer can work 24/7.
Yep.
You know, you can use whatever model, hybrid
Multiple
or no
markets.
Yeah, hybrid or no hybrid model, never
Different
gets tired,
skin tones.
Never gets
you can
old.
Have the perfect human being.
Exactly.
Right?
And you can mold them to shape your campaign, whatever that campaign is, right?
Imagine if you're an actor and you want to be in multiple markets, you can replicate yourself.
But these are like made out of total imagination, right?
Yeah. Yes, but there are even those that are actually creating similar identities of the other person,
okay.
Since they cannot travel during the pandemic, this Singapore rapper moved and actually had a virtual identity of herself photographed in Shanghai.
Yeah. So obviously it's a huge business model, right? Because if you're able to harness AI, right, and then
yes.
You can churn out all these influencers, you can make all the money from all the affiliate marketing and influencer income and so on and so forth. Right? But before I have to pass you the tissues because you're frothing all over ourselves, right?
No, I'm not. I actually can see the downsides.
There's a huge downside, right?
Yeah.
Because at the crux of it, why do brands align with social media influencers? It's because of their personalities, right?
Yes.
It's because of who they are and what they stand for. You know, like David Beckham, for example, right? Because he stands for something, okay? The problem with virtual influencers is that they are concoctions, right? And they are run by algorithms. And if those algorithms are prone to being vulnerable, for example, if they start to perpetrate hate speech, which is exactly the whole argument behind AI now, right? Large language models, OpenAI, Google's, Apple's GPT-3. So then it becomes troublesome.
Well, what's the difference then to the 40s, 50s where you have fictional comic characters like Superman and Spider-Man?
Because today it's huge, right? So Dr. Evil...
But they were huge now. I mean, so this is just another more realistic manifestation of someone. In the past, you had comic books who already had digital creations being created.
Captain Marvel
and
only
had
went
a certain
so far.
Personality.
Captain Marvel only... Well, Captain America only went so far. Today, if you are Dr. Evil and you want to take over the world...
Yes, I do. Thank you.
You can push out thousands of these guys every second, right?
So
you can basically influence thoughts.
Think about Spider-Man. Spider-Man was created as a fictional character. Then they moved into human acting.
Yep.
And the recent Spider-Verse is a whole concoction of different morphs of Spider-Man.
Okay, you guys have lost me completely because I'm not in the super, you know, I'm not a big superhero fan. But I just look at this article and I look at the pictures and I can tell you one thing. the so-called social media virtual ones, influencers, they just look hollow.
They do.
They look soulless and hollow. They look perfect, but too perfect.
I wonder.
That's the part that doesn't appeal to me. Because when I want to be attracted to a particular product or particular brand, and whoever that person is, you know, advertising for, there are flaws within that face. There are flaws which actually make that person so attractive.
So true.
Because if it's perfection in itself, it just looks too incredibly fake for me to believe it. And these guys look too fake, guys. Because it's like the eyes are perfect, the nose is perfect, you know?
Yeah, lah. So that's the smallest
problem.
Where
is that most important thing? The human appeal. Yeah. There's none. It doesn't exist.
But that's the smallest problem. The biggest problem is what Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk are pushing back for years, right? This is the dehumanization of society into the computer world, which is very dangerous.
It is true. We don't want to be replaced by androids.
We want to see our flaws.
We want to see our flaws.
And pimples and warts. The twirling finger has arrived, so we better make
haste.
Make haste while the sun hasn't shined yet. 6:26. We'll come back after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Now Stevie Wonder with Higher Ground. The Motown legend obviously singing about the huge supertanker. The Forgiven. No, actually, the Evergiven. Which has finally been dislodged from the sandy banks of the Suez Canal, thereby freeing up 12% of global trade to allow its untrammeled journey towards their destinations.
You can blame the moon for that.
The
because
moon?
Of the high tides low tides.
Oh, is that right? Not mm-hmm. the high winds, apparently.
Well, there was that, but also the high tides enabled it to move.
Actually, it was full moon last night, Yeah,
anyway. But I still can't get over the pictures of this, you know,
it was so funny,
ginormous
right?
ship that is as tall as the Empire State Building, right?
Yes, and I was checking, KLCC is 450 meters, so Ever Given is 400 meters. So imagine the size, quite close to KLCC height.
Yeah,
incredible.
And what was so cute about the pictures, I mean, was these little excavators next to the ship that looked like tiny little, like almost like toys next to it, desperately trying to dig away the sand.
Yeah, yeah. Incredible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so I did some searching on the Suez Canal, right? It's the best concession, man. You know, we make a big deal of the North Star Highway plus concessionaire, you know, 20 years concession. This concession is amazing, right? You got 12% of global trade going in between your shores, right? Every single day, like 90 ships per day. Yep. These are huge super tankers, right? Imagine the fees you collect every time they come in and out your outdoor.
Not only that, there's also fees for when you go through the Suez Canal. A team gets on board the ship supposedly to guide the ship through the Suez Canal. Now I heard this BBC podcast. No, that's what they said. This BBC podcast. This lady said they actually do nothing. They come on board. And it costs you, by the way, $300,000 each time this team comes on board.
Mm.
And they don't do very much. And then they get off. And then the ship just passes through. But this time something went wrong, clearly.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me considering the British fought with Egypt over this Suez Canal.
Exactly. And, you know, compare $300,000 to the 42 ringgit from Penang to KL, right? So which makes you think that the craft Isthmus, which will basically bypass Singapore. Right, yeah, Thailand, Malaysia, you know that. Like,
there was talk of it.
Well, we have Panama Canal as well.
Yes, the Panama Canal. They sell South America, right?
Yes, right. Well, if you go to Google and type Suez Canal, you see a really cute emoji of moving ships on the Google Strip page.
That's pretty cool.
Yes, so
imagine
check it
that.
Out.
Imagine if Malaysia and Thailand were to get their acts together and get the craft Isthmus to become a canal.
A reality.
Yeah, and thereby impoverishing Singapore in the process. Not that we want to do that, obviously, but
I'm not sure it is. Okay, I'm going to throw some, you know, water on this. For the Suez Canal, it does make quite a lot of sense because the Cape of Good Hope, if you take the longer route, takes an additional 2 weeks. So there is significant cost savings from a fuel perspective.
I'm not sure whether
for the Malaysia, because, you know, it's not huge.
The savings isn't so big. Yeah. Yeah. I presume that going around the peninsula doesn't take 2 weeks.
Yeah. So
So versus the cost of, then it doesn't make a lot of sense.
And also where do you redredge it? It's probably at Thailand side and not at the border between Thailand and Malaysia.
Good news.
It's most narrow.
Good news, guys. Phuket tourism arrival returns back with a vengeance.
Are you itching to wear your Speedos so you can sun in the beach?
Yeah, yeah. I've got this amazing like pink Lycra Speedos.
All right, moving on. So apparently Thailand, they're looking ahead to open the tourism sector come July 1st. And it's going to be open to vaccinated visitors without the need for quarantine. So
that's
they expect
big.
As many as 2 million foreign tourists in the second half of the year. And I think for them, they desperately need it because they're targeting to collect as much as 105 billion baht or $3.4 billion in revenue. And the key target markets are China, Russia, UK, Germany, France, Sweden, and the US.
I'm not going to go to Phuket. I'm not going to even touch Phuket with a 10-yard pole, man. Imagine the deluge of people there. It's going to be horrendous.
How do you assert borders within Phuket and rest of domestic Thailand? That's, for me, interesting.
It's an island,
so it makes
it a little bit easier, right?
I guess then you have to, but you still have to have quite tight borders, I guess, within
But it's
Thailand
only
itself.
For Phuket, and you need to be vaccinated. So I guess what they're trying to do is control the people coming on, and then from there, they're not supposed to be traveling around the whole of Thailand, I suppose.
I think it's almost a given that these vaccine passports will become a reality by the end of the year.
And recently, I think Biden just yesterday said that they will want the private sector to drive the vaccine passports in the United States. I think different countries are taking different approaches towards the vaccine passports.
Yeah.
But you're right, I think it's going to be a reality.
Yeah, but I think for Thailand, they have no choice, right? Talking about a country that's super dependent on tourism, where the GDP contribution is close to 20%.
That's huge.
Yeah, so, you know, many, many jobs, apparently, like places like Pattaya, Phuket, are complete ghost towns because there's just no tourists. So I think they need to experiment. Where we wish them the best of luck, and maybe they can show us the way.
Hopefully. Okay, 7:15, we'll come back after this with some social media and, of course, local news. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Stranglers with Always the Sun. Now, before we get into the local news headlines, some social media on Twitter, Ravi Rava Rasalingam, replying to our comments on flexibility in the 21st century post-pandemic. He says that flexibility should work if both employee and employer are self-motivated to achieving goals and are results-orientated. Unfortunately, most employers in Malaysia tend to focus on the clock so that culture permeates to the employees too. That's so true, isn't it? The clock watches, they are basically, right? It's a very...
Very old school.
Very old school.
We need to move with the times.
Yeah, it's a bit like the political situation here, right? Very old school. Too old.
A little bit so. And somewhat related to this, in front of me, I've got the... You know, I love to read about Malaysian politics on the Singapore Straits Times.
It's so predictable, Wong.
I know, but it's kind of cute because it's supposed to be kind of funny, right? Albeit it's written by a Malaysian. Shannon Teo, of course, is the Malaysian bureau chief. And he brought up an interesting question. UMNO wants to lead Malaysia, but who will lead UMNO? Dung Jung Jung.
So many options.
Yeah. Two options staring right at you, but maybe not suitable. One has been convicted. Case is still ongoing. Yeah,
correct.
And the then many waiting lead, in the back, you know.
The one that wants to lead is neither a Dato or Tan Sri. It's in charge of the vaccination program. Maybe not.
One day.
Who's the one who spoke to him? Was it you?
Yes, I spoke to him on the breakfast grill. And
then he said that all politicians...
Yeah, all 222 MPs want to be prime minister.
Well, I think he's been smart. And, you know, the commonly used term is strategic silence.
Strategic silence.
Which is you don't say and do these things when there's so much already mess swirling around everywhere. So just keep your cool, keep your calm, do your work.
Obviously, he's been reading the 48 Laws of Power by Yeast.
Or maybe just taking his cue from a certain person who has always wanted to be prime minister and has said it many times but has yet to be prime minister.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't even know who you're referring to. I'm so confused, but yes, I get what you're
Malaysians
saying.
Malaysians have mastered the art of crypto language.
Yes, I think you figure it out after a while.
But can I just move from Singapore? Because there's an also article about compensation paid, where I think Singapore has agreed to pay Malaysia 320 million ringgit for high-speed rail.
So we're paying them, they're paying us.
We are paying them. Yes, but the bill of $102.8 million was much lower than the $217 million that was originally touted.
Whoop-de-doo, hooray for Noddy. Not the
same,
we can
afford
it. So maybe
there was some
place.
Arbitration or discussion, right?
Yes, so when they asked the question, the Ministry of Transport said, why was there a discrepancy between the 102 and 270 million? Well, they've said that they basically are able to recover value from the land it acquired, thus not seeking compensation for it.
Okay, and this is our Minister of Transport.
The Singapore side. Okay. Explaining why is it that the value that we are paying Malaysia is much lower than the 270 million.
Okay, I think it's also related to the fact that the Singapore government can recover the value from the land, right?
Exactly.
So, okay, they were trying to be fair, I guess.
Yeah. I've got the Edge Daily in front of me, the CEO of Morning Brief. Very good. So Adam Aziz, the reporter there, reports that Datasonic's two largest shareholders have resigned, okay? And of course, Datasonic is the company that has been going all over the place, up to nearly $3, $4 actually. And now back below $2, last close yesterday. So anyway, Chu Ben-Ben, okay, the deputy managing director, 64 years old, been in the role for 10 years, is leaving Datasonic apparently to further studies for self-improvement. This is someone who is actually facing corruption charges, so maybe those studies will be actually quite useful. The other guy is a guy called Dato' Razali Mohamed Yusof. He's resigned as well, and he's an engineer by training, and basically he quit the board to pursue other interests.
We're talking about the board exit. Yasmin Mahmood, I think, from former MDEC, has also exited Post-Malaysia board.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes, yesterday.
And I wonder whether there'll be any more exits from all the GLCs after the UMNO General Assembly, right? As if I'm not correct, there are 14 key UMNO individuals in different GLC positions. And there was a bit of this, like, should they leave? Should they stay? Which also is related to the 11 ministers. And yesterday, according to the Malay Mail, our Prime Minister met with several ministers immediately after the UMNO closure.
I wonder what
the
contents
General
of the discussion for
well,
that.
Well, we don't know. The meeting lasted just 1 hour and cars were seen leaving the PM's office at 6:45. So among those seen, and this is according to the Malay Mail, Senior Minister Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, who of course is also Bera Member of Parliament, Energy and Natural Resource Minister Dato' Sri Shamsul Anwar Nazara, and Dato' Sri Adam Baba, who is our Health Minister.
Were horses also seen in the compound? Were they being traded? Arabian stallions, maybe.
Maybe a few frogs, who knows?
A few Cheshire cats, maybe as well, smiling from ear to ear.
But we don't know, because none of the ministers, of course, wanted to comment. But interesting, I think whatever reverberations as a result of the UMNO General Assembly will continue. And it's something we will be discussing at 7:45 later today with Dr. Hamidin. And we're looking at it from the perspective, I think, from the other parties. So that's the likes of Bersatu, PAS, and maybe even we might ask about DAP, Pakatan Harapan, who knows.
Well, talking about seizures, I think, Chong, you have an article about US Customs issuing a seize order on Top Glove products.
Yeah.
Forced labor.
Yeah, Uncle Sam is basically seizing all Top Glove gloves from its borders because it reckons that Top Glove has been producing these things, these gloves, using forced labour.
Yeah, and the stock has fallen to $5.05. $5.05.
Yeah. Okay, 6:55, the twirling finger appears. We'll come back after this with the news and then after that, the markets. Pearl Jam, Daughter, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.